Blog Talk Radio.
Number 98. Take a hot yoga class.
You guys ready to take hot yoga with 98 degrees?
From the slump of the Chinese business model to the collapse of the Hillary presidency, as USA gets ready for Papa Biden, while broadcasting from a small waterproof camoed duck blind. Pretty wet out there, in other words. Pretty gosh dang wet out there. And the, it's just a lot of rain came down where I'm at off of Roadrunner. So I'm looking to see if I can get the, rain. Holy cow. It says 1.8 inch in an hour. That cannot be correct. Today's rain, 0.67 though. Storm total, 0.74. That's more like it. August total, 1.29. And year-to-date rain, 8 inches. So it was a pretty good, I was kind of watching the storm last night as it developed in the Doppler. The Doppler goes, obviously different colors. If you're ever pull it up, Doppler El Paso, and, goes down from the very top is white. And then it goes purple, and then red, yellow, green, blue. But, when you get up into the red section, yellow and red is almost always rain. So we had a pretty good dose last night. So, and I have a little website that shows lightning strikes as they're occurring. And let me see if I can get the name of that for you. It's pretty good. Pretty good. It's almost simultaneously will tell you if you go to lightningmaps.org, one word, lightningmaps.org, then you can watch this valley and El Paso. You can watch the whole United States, as a matter of fact, as the lightning strikes come in, but it's kind of exciting. All right, so All right. So as I was mentioning, there is an article out there that is kind of ominous for Hillary Clinton. Are Democrats turning against Hillary? CBS News is asking this. And so they want to know, with all of the things that are going on, whether somebody else can jump into the race. It's supposedly late, although it's a long ways off until the voting, but it is, according to the experts, late. And Jerry Brown says this email thing, it has kind of a mystique to it. Governor of California, it's almost like a vampire. She has to find a stake and put it right through the heart of these emails in some way. Well, I think she missed her chance to do that. And I mean, I think one of the problems is that this is a totally self-created, crisis. That's one problem. Another problem is that it is, it hasn't been handled very well. And I think that she must have thought that it would just go away. And according to her theory, if she hadn't cooperated with this email search, then nothing would have come up. So she's, according to her, she is being punished for her own rectitude, which sounds a little bit strange. But anyway, here is George Stephanopoulos talking about the possibility that is apparently getting stronger every day of Joe Biden coming into the race supposedly to replace Hillary.
Still going strong, Donald Trump drawing record crowds. He's going to join us live in a moment. But we begin with that brewing intrigue on the Democratic side. Vice President Biden calling popular star Elizabeth Warren to Washington for a secret meeting on Saturday. ABC's John Carl tracking all the latest from the White House. And John, this is the strongest sign yet that Biden taking a serious look at this race.
It sure is, George. This is a meeting between the two Democrats who could potentially pose the greatest threat to Hillary Clinton if either one of them decided to run. Now, Warren, of course, has emphatically ruled out running. Biden is seriously considering it. It is hard to imagine anything that would give him a bigger initial boost among base Democratic voters than support from Warren. Warren, by the way, has been decidedly cool about Hillary Clinton's campaign. Just listen to this clip from a recent interview with
Was it a mistake for your party to anoint her as the nominee so early on?
I don't think anybody's been anointed.
So Biden clearly sees an opening here with that lukewarm comment.
Absolutely, and especially in recent polls on the question of honesty and trustworthiness. Hillary Clinton is suffering largely as a result of this email controversy. Look at this recent Quinnipiac poll nationally. Only 37% say that they trust Hillary Clinton. 57% say no. When you look at Biden's numbers, they're almost exactly the reverse. A strong majority say that they find Biden honest and trustworthy.
The question is, would he be willing to make that case if he did run? What are they saying about timing his advisors? I talked to one supporter this week who said it looks like Biden's saying he's about 60-40 to run, and they're feeling some pressure to make an announcement soon.
Yeah, now what Biden himself is telling people, I am told, is that he's got quite a bit of time. He says the real deadline is that first Democratic debate, which is October 13th. But one very close Biden advisor told me yesterday that he believes that Biden has to do much quicker, has to make this decision much quicker. He starts, of course, way behind. He has no national organization, no fundraising. If he's going to run, he's got to get moving.
Okay.
Well, what would be ideal for Joe Biden is if he came in as Hillary was exiting, and maybe that's what they're negotiating. Maybe they're having a talk with Hillary and saying to her that, basically your campaign is dead. Let Joe come in and take all your support. Let him take all of your reps and all of your workers. And, you could always put Hillary in as the vice president. Although I think the fact that if she did drop out of the race would mean that she's out, period. That's it. Pretty much the end of her life, her political life. Here's from CNN, John King,
who is a Massachusetts Democratic strategist, knows Warren very well, and has worked for Vice President Biden going back to the 1980s, is quoted on the record in the Boston Globe this morning saying, "I think that would be a great ticket." Warren, Biden, Warren. You don't say that publicly unless you're trying to stir up mischief.
It is. As trial balloons go, this is not subtle, right? And I think it's very smart on the part of Biden's team, if they wanted to gauge the interest in this, to have something very high profile, very public like this, and to do it by way of Elizabeth Warren, whose supporters are the real up for grabs faction of the Democratic Party. It's supporters of Elizabeth Warren who've largely gravitated to Bernie Sanders, created a big headache for Hillary Clinton. So much of this is about Hillary's weakness and her sort of skyrocketing negative ratings, her inability to completely consolidate the Democratic Party in the way that she foresaw. So, you know, whatever Joe Biden ends up deciding, this is a real statement of the sort of vacuum that seems to exist in the Democratic race right now.
And getting Elizabeth Warren's, you know, hat tip or at least subtle blessing would almost immediately help Biden bridge the divide between the super left of the Bernie Sanders supporters and the more establishment Democratic support the Clinton interest. He'd be right there in the middle, draw from both of them, probably start to nudge Bernie Sanders out of the race and make it a much more serious race between these two poles. And you know, the other thing he probably has to consider is the fact that, you know, remember, she was a bankruptcy lawyer back in the day, or bankruptcy law expert. Yeah. And there are elements of his past that would probably run into trouble with her. This was probably designed also to just sort of, like you said, feel her out on economic policy, right, make clear where he stands. So that way, if he does jump in and she gets asked, she'll at least say, well, you know.
Well, who cares about Elizabeth Warren except that she is Elizabeth Warren is the new, a relatively new senator from Massachusetts, who's considered to be one of the people in the party that is farthest to the left. And Bernie Sanders is another one of those people. If she comes in somehow, if she came in, say, as the vice president, that would shore up a lot of the concern of the far left in the party. Now, the Democratic Party has increasingly been taken over by the far left. And so it is important that these voters, core voters, are treated with, deference and respect and everything. And one way you would do that is by getting Elizabeth Warren, who's a professor from Harvard, involved in this race. And as soon as she was elected, a number of people had asked her about running herself, which is since Obama was able to make it to the presidency, it seems like no lack of experience has any impact on people's minds, or there's no demand that a person have a certain amount of job experience. Now, what it'll be in the future, I don't know, but it's helping out Donald Trump. It's helping out Ben Carson, and it is helping out Elizabeth Warren. Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren ticket, I don't know. I really don't know. I'd have to think about that one. But anyway, that's the talk of the town. My guess, as I've told you last week, or maybe even the week before that, was that Hillary's going to have to drop out. I don't see any other way for her to get out. To be totally honest, I think the Democratic Party has got to be furious with her, the way that she's handled this this email thing. There's just, from a Democratic standpoint, there's no upside to it, and it is reminiscent of Bill Clinton scandals that didn't have to happen. Now, it is 6:18. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. 523-1450. Give your opinion on who the standard bearer for the party is going to be in this next election for the Democrats or Republicans, for that matter. And I do have the text machine, 805-6180, 805-6180, and we will be right back. It is 6:21 right now, and looks like we've got a 40% chance of rain for the day. And so supposed to be clearing up tonight without having any kind of a chance of rain tonight. 67 degrees right now with light rain, high of 90, low of 68. So it'll still be a little bit warm out there today. So anyway, do you really care who the nominee is for the left? Do you think it's a foregone conclusion that the Republicans will finally win a presidential race? Or do you give the Democrats a fighting chance on this one? I'm a little bit, I would have to think that after two terms of Obama, the chances of changing the White House party is pretty strong. Now, in the meantime, China is experiencing some extreme economic problems. So anyway, what has happened is that as China has built itself up as a power, as an economic power, as time goes by, then the economy of China is growing and people are becoming wealthier. And so the audience for selling Chinese goods becomes more home as much as it is the world, because you've got, you know, a billion people over there who can spend money. In addition to that, you've got the fact that the expense of creating stuff, junk, whatever you want to call it, over in China goes up to the point where other economies become more attractive for investors to ask them to build stuff. And so, you know, China is really the kind of suffering the downfall of its own economy a little bit because of the fact that it has become so big and so strong that at some point you can't. They have artificially devalued the yuan, their economic currency, for decades. There comes a point when you can't do that anymore, and they've kind of basically reached that point. So the economy and the currency has to be restructured, or it has to be kind of rebooted. Now listen to this. Police probe Mel Gibson's angry tirade at Australian photographer. Actor denies shoving, spitting. Interestingly enough, a topless parade in New York City scolds Mayor de Blasio. He is just something else. But the crime rate in the city there has gone down overall. But in notable places like the local parks and stuff, Central Park, crime rate has gone way up, and there's a lot of criticism of Mayor de Blasio, his socialist approach to law enforcement, which got rid of things like stop and search. So, all right. So over the weekend, I was kind of watching Senator Cruz's activities. Donald Trump's lead is widening. In the meantime, Senator Cruz is basically making a move himself because he is a very formidable candidate and has an agenda that is very attractive to Christians. And so anyway, I do have a little sports story here for you that you either might find it. You might not know who this is because it's been a long time since he's been in the game. John McEnroe saying that he could beat Serena Williams now. And I honestly don't doubt that he could beat Serena Williams just because he has continued to play tennis and his game was always a game of finesse. He's in his 50s, certainly. It would be probably a pretty good match, but he's got to be stronger. He's got to be stronger than she is. But anyway, this is from the Jimmy Kimmel Show. John McEnroe, I could beat Serena Williams.
The U.S. Open is coming up. That's your, I mean, that's your domain, right? That's got to be where you feel most comfortable. New Yorkers.
Right. A lot of energy. Night matches. People have had a couple pops.
You won a lot of those tournaments. How many did you win?
I won four.
Four singles, right?
You won some doubles there. I won, I believe, four doubles.
Why don't the doubles count as much?
Doubles don't count as much because they're not as good as the singles player.
Really?
They're sort of like the slower version of the singles guys.
It's always a weird thing to me that the singles are so important, but then you'll go out there and potentially exhaust yourself playing doubles matches at the same time.
Well, that's why no singles players really play doubles anymore.
Anymore? Oh, right. Oh, wow.
I thought that doubles is a good way for me to sort of practice and get some reps in. I didn't like to train in the gym as much as some of the players these days. And nowadays they figured out a way to max out. They're like machines now.
Right, yeah, yeah. You were just all kind of physical.
We tried to see how well we could do by, you know, I wanted to be a little bit of like a rock star type of tennis player. Like, could you possibly be number one and to some degree burn the candle on both ends?
And the answer was yes.
The answer was yes for a while, but it caught up to me eventually.
I would have liked to see you smoking while you played. You Serena Williams is the big story at the U.S. Open right now. She's calendar Grand Slam. That's what she's going for, right?
Calendar Grand Slam.
Explain what that is.
That's winning our four biggest titles, one of which is the U.S. Open, Wimbledon, French Open, Australia, all in the same year. The last player to do that was Steffi Graf, who's probably the second or greatest player that ever lived to me behind Serena. She did that in 1988, and before that it was done, I think, in 1950. So this is very, very rare.
Have you ever hit with Serena?
I have hit with Serena.
If you guys played a serious match, who do you think would win that match?
My daughters are over there. Mm-hmm. I think it's mixed. They think I'd probably lose to Serena. I believe that I could still take her.
You do? Honestly. And why hasn't this happened?
15 years ago, Donald Trump, who seems to be in the news a little bit.
He's going to be our president soon, yes. He's
going to be a president in about a year. He made an offer, which, you know, I felt like was not enough, and I think he was humoring the two of us. And Serena, she's got a lot to lose by losing to an old fart like myself.
Yeah, right, right. It's not a great deal.
And I've got a lot to lose because if I lose to, God forbid, a woman, then I'm not allowed in any men's locker room for the next 15 years or possibly the end of my life. So that's part of why it's intriguing. So if they paid the type of money that Pacquiao and what's that other guy got?
Mayweather. By the way, that would be a great double bill. I mean, you guys, you have Pacquiao and Mayweather, a rematch, and then afterwards we expand the boxing ring. You and Serena get in there or just move over to the
I don't think court. I could take her in the ring. I think I could take
her in the ring. Okay.
All right, so John McEnroe, well, I guess you'd have to play the game, but that reminiscent of Billie Jean King versus Bobby Riggs, which was a long time ago, but was a man against a woman, and Bobby Riggs got beat. But John McEnroe's in pretty good shape, and he is, I don't know, he's always just been he was always an extremely talented player, kind of naturally. He didn't do a lot of strength training or anything. All right. So these nuts who I had mentioned before, getting 9%, excuse me. He's a 15-year-old kid from Iowa, has finally decided who he's backing. And it is Bernie Sanders. So that just goes to show you, anyway, what would a Bernie Sanders presidency look like? He is a Democrat, or he's a social Democrat, whatever the difference is. The difference in my perspective is social Democrats are what they have over in the European countries. And for my take on it, having kind of experienced it firsthand, the social Democrats are as much socialism as you could bring into an economy without having it immediately collapse. Socialism and economics don't go together very well. It's more of a theory of how to make the world more fair. But anyway, it's going to be interesting if Bernie got in there. I don't think people will vote for a socialist, somebody who calls themselves a socialist. But this race has got a lot of kind of the ground is moving a little bit, and for Hillary to have to leave would be a 5-2-3-14-50. All right, we'll come back, and got a lot of different things that I wanted to go over today. Let's come back and talk a little bit about Trump, because Trump is still rising in the polls. and to see what he's been up to lately. My theory, he'll be in it till the end, and unless something spectacular happens, some gaffe that even he can't overcome, I think he's going to be the nominee. That's just my impression. The question now is who would be his best vice president. I'll give you my opinion when we come back. Maybe it'll surprise you. Probably won't. AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. 523-1450 to call in. 805-6180. And be right back.
I'll get it.
No, it's fine.
Hey, don't make me fight a stranger.
Whoa. I'm pregnant.
Why did you let me do that?
Amazon's Catastrophe is one of the freshest and funniest shows.
That's exactly the response I was hoping for.
It's laugh out loud funny.
I'm actually, I suppose, I'm a fool.
Thank you very much. I love the positivity of this land. It's incredible. Whooping. Yeah, that doesn't happen in England. I've never heard anyone ever whoop. Yesterday, a man in a diner came up to me and went, "You're English! That's awesome!" Like I had anything to do with it. Like I was in my mum's belly. Point yourself towards Westminster. And then he said something magnificent. He honestly looked at me and went, "Let me tell you this, man. English women. Oh! They're..."
Our next guest is a very funny man who's Forbes magazine's list as one of the top earning comedians in the world. You can see his first ever concert film, The Fluffy Movie, in theaters starting Friday, July 25th. Please welcome the hilarious Gabriel Fluffy Iglesias.
New York, how you feeling?
All right, so I think, this is just my opinion, 523-1450, I think Cruz would be a good vice president for Trump. And the reason I think so is because Donald Trump has got this massive appeal to all these disaffected individuals out there, meaning people that feel like they've kind of been pushed out of the process. And as a matter of fact, I got a little clip kind of explaining that, but it's something that anybody could figure out, that Trump is appealing to a lot of people who, you could call them unhappy white voters. You could call them white men. You could call them the people that were totally in power until a few decades ago, a few years ago. This group of people, the people that we're talking about are living out in the out in America. They might be higher income, or they might be lower income, but feeling like this presidency has not been aimed at them, and that's from a an angle of audience. Now, setting aside whoever the audience was, they're very unhappy with a great number of Obama's policies, but they don't know who to express it to. And because of political correctness, they thought that they would never get a chance to, except amongst themselves, say, "This guy's an idiot. I can't stand him. I don't care if he's black or not. I just can't stand him." Considered to be a racist statement. So here anyway, is a little bit with Joy Reid on this basic idea.
I mean, I'd like to see a Venn diagram between the Tea Party, the Palinites, and the Trump supporters. I'll bet there'd be a lot of overlap there. And remember, the Tea Partiers claimed they weren't far right. They weren't really Republicans. They were just, you know, average Americans who wanted the truth. And so I think what you have with Trump and what I see as his base is not just the far right, but the right. And it's a lot of Republicans who are disgruntled with the Republican Party. It's white Republicans. It's mostly male Republicans. And it's basically white Americans who feel left out of Obama's America, who are peeved with the fact that their preferred party can't seem to beat Obama, and who want to hear a guy be able to stand up and be as politically incorrect as they can't be. They'd get fired from their jobs if they put on Facebook some of the things Trump said. But here's a guy who can say what he wants, to them be a man's man and get out there and be the kind of Ronald Reagan-esque kind of America where we did what we want, said what we want, pushed the world around, and told them to go to hell if we wanted to. I think that's what they like.
Well, you're capturing his idiom now, that's for sure. Howard?
Okay, so if you've got Cruz in there, that would draw the... Okay, so Trump is representing disaffected people. He's also, I think... appealing to individuals who are just kind of common sense, like we've got a problem with illegals going around murdering people. It's in the news at least. So let's shut down the border. Let's start sending people back. That's a common sense approach that goes without would have gone without saying in any other age except ours. But now it is an act of extreme defiance of social norms and an act of radical racism to say something like that. So here is, I think Ben Carson would be good, but okay, so Cruz would be good because Trump is not really representing religious people, although undoubtedly a large number of Christians in the Republican Party support a lot of what he's saying. But Cruz is specifically evangelical, and he's the kind of evangelical that people on the right like. He has an Ivy League degree. He's got a Princeton-Harvard background. Ben Carson would be a very attractive candidate because he's also evangelical. He's Christian. He's Seventh-day Adventist. And he's extraordinarily successful, and he's black, which doesn't hurt. But you could put a lot of people in that slot behind Donald. As long as you're arguing this is going to balance it out, you could put in Marco Rubio, you could put in Scott Walker, and these people know this. They're trying to push him out of the game. At the same time, coming to the conclusion probably that if he has this much momentum behind him, then it might be better to grab onto his coattails along for the ride, you know. And I would think that if the Donald wins, if Donald Trump said something that I thought was kind of symbolic, which was he stated that he's a nice guy, which is probably true. He's probably a nice guy. If he is the kind of person that I'm kind of picking up on, he'll be nice to people until they stab him in the back, and then he'll turn around and go after him. I think it behooves these other politicians to not create a war with him, and to be able to basically stay on good terms. And then he undoubtedly is going to pick some of these people, I would think anyway, for different positions. All right, by the way, SB Nation just put out its listing of college football teams, and in tier 8, yes, there are 8 tiers of, I think there's, 128 teams. Tier 8, New Mexico State is 126 out of 128 teams. So we're not only in the 8th tier, we're only two steps from the bottom, the worst team in the country. According to this preseason poll, New Mexico State 126, UTSA, I don't even know what that is. Maybe it's University of Tennessee, 127. Charlotte, 128. Wow. All right, so who's the top, you ask? Number 1, Ohio State. Number 2, Alabama. Number 3, Oregon. Number 4, Baylor. Number 5, Georgia. Number 6, TCU. That's considered first tier. That's contenders for the national championship. And 7, Ole Miss. 8, Auburn. 9, UCLA. 10, LSU. 11, Michigan State. 12 Oklahoma, 13 USC, 14 Arkansas, 15 Arizona State, 16 Stanford, 17 Florida State. That's the first two tiers. Okay, so anyway, you didn't think that we were going to be highly ranked, did you? All right, so clip here on a rally that, speaking of the Donald, he went to a rally in Alabama, and what they stated was he didn't fill up, and on the New York Times said he didn't fill up the stadium. What they didn't mention is he had 30,000 people. So check this one out.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Thank you. Oh, that's so beautiful. You know, now I know how the great Billy Graham felt, because it's the same feeling. We love Billy Graham. We love Billy Graham. You know, this all started. We had a hotel, and we were going to have about 250 or 300 people. And the hotel was great. They called. They said, something's happening here. We can't hold this. This is crazy what's going on. And then we went to the convention center, and they can have 10,000 people. And we're all set, and we're excited. And the next day they said, too many people. We can't put them in. So we came here. We came here. You know, today, if you notice, we have a stock market not doing so well. We have a country not doing so well. We've been saying it for a long time. We have politicians, other than the few politicians that are with us tonight, right? We'll exclude them. But we have politicians that don't have a clue. They're all talk, they're no action. What's happening to this country is disgraceful. And, you know, when I announced that I was running for president, I brought up the subject of illegal immigration. And I took a lot of heat, that I can tell you. Rush Limbaugh actually said incoming. He got more incoming than anybody I've ever seen. And 2 weeks later, everybody was apologizing to me. They saw that I was right. Between what happened in San Francisco to incredible Kate and her family is such an incredible family, and Jameel, and so many people have been so badly hurt. The other day in California last week, a woman, 66 years old, a veteran, was killed, raped, sodomized, tortured, and killed by an illegal immigrant. We have to do it. We have to do something. We have to do something.
So Donald Trump is really putting a face on basically not just what's going on now, which is these bizarre crimes. I call them bizarre because it's inconceivable that even someone as progressive as Obama would allow criminals to stay in the country. It could only backfire. And yet there is this sense that has been repeated kind of over and over again, that the country is out of control. Now, you may not agree with that, but if it's in control, where is it heading? Where's public policy or foreign policy heading, for example? It's a very scary time, but to find out that the cartels are set up 70 miles within the Arizona border is surreal, and that the president wouldn't call in the National Guard or the Army or whatever, the Army Rangers or the SEALs or whatever, to secure that, tells people, unless you're totally out of touch or you are kind of disconnected from reality, it tells individuals that this presidency is really out of touch with what the average American's aspirations and hopes are. One of which is to live in a safe country, you know. So we'll take a little break and come back. I've got another clip from the Donald, but I think some of this race, if you put aside the claims that it's racism, it's white power, it is rednecks or whatever, I think part of this is about making the country more secure, both at nationally and internationally. Anyway, we'll come back. I've got another clip that the Donald from this an interview over immigration that you'll find interesting. Kelly O'Connell, this is AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in 805-61802 text. All right, so 6:53, trying to figure out what it is about Donald that is inspiring people. And I've got a little clip here. I think that part of this is style. with part of the criticism of Donald is the style. His style is over the top style. Part of it is I have no doubt that he's a narcissist, a full blown narcissist. But if he can do a good job running the country, who cares? I mean, I think Obama's a full blown narcissist just from watching him. Have you ever heard Obama apologize for anything, even one thing? I'm not aware of it. So anyway, most people in the country believe we need to be headed, we need to be pointed in a new direction, but it's been officially illegal in the media, I believe, to criticize Obama unless you're at Fox News or you're on AM radio. So anyway, here's a little clip from, let's see here, this is, all right, I got to pull up this one right here on immigration because that's going to affect all of us. All right, here we go. Everybody knows that he said we'll send them all back. But, I mean, what does that mean? I honestly, he's a smart guy. He knows you can't send all these people back. But I think that we have to put up a wall and we have to send some people back just to make a statement to the individuals who are fighting to get into the country that it's going to backfire on you. You got to put something out there. Here we go. The Donald on immigration.
Immigration.
Right.
You have people in the GOP worried that you're going to alienate, excuse the pun, the Hispanic population. You may have 28 million voters.
You're right.
Pulling the birthright exception, that may be constitutionally dubious. You shouldn't be taking such an extreme position. What do you say?
I have to do the right thing. It's a time, you know, this country is so politically correct. Nobody wants to take a stance on anything. I was the one that brought up, and I took a lot of heat. You gave it to me, too. I mean, you were one of the leaders that first week and week and a half after I made the announcements. And a lot of people, including yourselves, they were not reading it the way I said it. And that is now fact. And I've been actually complimented by some of the people that because I brought up the whole thing of illegal immigration. Look, at some point, we have to be honest with ourselves. It's called, you know, they like to use the word undocumented because it's more political. I don't use that word. They're illegal immigrants. They came over illegally. Some are wonderful people and they've been here for a while. They got to go out.
But how do you do it in a practical way? You really think you can round up 11 million
people? You know
what?
At some point, we're going to try getting them back to good ones. We have a lot of good ones. Same time,
kind of mixed
you
message,
got some
though,
serious.
Because you say you're going to get rid of whole families, but then you say you want them back.
You got to go. They're illegal. We have a country. We have to have a border. We have to have a wall. Mexico will pay for the wall. I get a kick out of these guys that never negotiated. They can't negotiate for their own house.
They're going to pay for a $4 billion wall when you give them like $280 million a year. Why would they say yes?
Because they make a fortune with us. Our companies are moving into Mexico more than almost any other place right now. We're losing our industry. We're losing our business to Mexico. Their leaders are smart as hell. I mean, 300,000. I looked on your show. 300,000 births this year, illegals in our country. That means we picked up 300,000 people that are going to get Social Security. You have people on the border, and in one day they walk over, have a baby, and now all of a sudden we're supposed to pay the baby.
So the citizenship for those babies,
medical,
you would revoke it now and retroactively?
Number one, the 14th Amendment is very questionable as to whether or not somebody can come over, have a baby, and immediately that baby is a citizen. Okay?
Know, the court has pretty much said that it reads an immigrant there. This is a minority legal
Chris,
opinion you're talking
there are
about.
Many people that totally feel that.
Cause they it that way.
Amending is too big a deal. It's going to take, it'll be two terms. I'd be in my second term on my eighth year by the time, assuming everything went smoothly, because to amend the Constitution
takes a long time.
But I believe,
especially on a very divisive issue.
I believe you can win it legally. Okay, I believe you can win it legally. And in any event, the parents have to leave. If the parents leave, unless they're very bad people, they're going to take their baby.
75% of the country feels that you should be trying to find a way to let people stay with conditions, as opposed to kicking everybody out.
These people, the really good ones, and we have some great ones. We're going to try and expedite so they can come back, but they're going to come back legally. The first thing I'm doing is getting the bad ones out, and they're gone, and they're not coming back either.
All right, my guess, and I think this is a very good topic to discuss, if there's going to be any deportations, it is going to rock the political establishment to its knees. And I think that the way it's going to happen, if it does happen at all, is that people are going to be allowed to stay here, but they're going to have to go through a process. The ones that they want to keep, the ones that are the most valuable to America, are going to have to go through some kind of a process where they've admit that they've come in illegally and that they want to get, you know, be legalized. And there's going to be other people that are going to be kicked out if we go in this direction. But how do you get around this? You know, how do you have a law that's never enforced? Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, and we will be back to talk more about anchor babies and some other things. Ouch. Is that politically incorrect? We'll be right back. 6:59 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. And let me get into some of these freaking emails or texts. Pardon me. All right, I'll take them from top to bottom. Kelly, what we need is an expanded version of what Ike did in the 1950s. Most self-deported people can be made to feel unwelcome without any force being used. You know, I've thought about this a lot, and I think that, I mean, for me anyway, since we haven't been really deporting people en masse, it would kind of be, you know, it would just feel weird. At the same time, I think it would kind of crack into this sense that you can come here and do whatever you want. And I think that's a very dangerous idea to put out there, is that any person from any country in the world can come here and they're welcome, and we will somehow find them a place to live. And get them, they'll get into social. I mean, here's one of the outrageous things, is that I think people were so beaten down that they didn't know how to react. I mean, it's one thing to bring people in. It's another thing to say, as I believe the administration said, that that they can, they'll be put into social welfare immediately. Or as soon as possible. That to me is, I mean, it's obviously a bad idea, you know. But there's no real logic behind it. And what I'm wondering about is, I mean, at what point does a bad decision become a bad trend, become a bad policy, become a bad way of life? And I think that we kind of tapped into that a long time ago. And I don't understand how you would make something good out of that, because what you're doing is you're encouraging people to come over illegally, and there's this huge government infrastructure that they've discovered that is been set up to help these people get relocated, which is, if it's not technically illegal, is against government policy, because the government policy in the United States is generally, it has been, to come in legally and then get involved in the system. But the government, if the government rewards people by giving them a place to stay, you're not really solving problems in other countries. You know, countries that can't keep their people safe. What you're doing is you're creating what is called, well, in the law, it's called an attractive nuisance, but what you're doing is, except it's not a nuisance to these people. It's really just being, I just think that the thing of it is so upsetting to hear that if you criticize any of these decisions, that you're racist. I mean, you can see that the insidious nature of the PC movement is that it sets up this fake reality. This, I mean, you can believe anything that you want, but don't take questionable positions and then ensconce them, cement them into American society and say that if you disagree with this, then you're a bad person. I mean, that to me is just, you know, we got to have free speech in this country. Everything else is dependent on that. If we do have free speech, then we can solve all problems because we will have the room to be able to work on it. But the way things are set up now, like that lady said in that clip, you know, you're not going to get up and say any of the things Donald Trump is saying in social media because you'll be fired. What kind of a country you get fired from your job just for speaking your mind? And I'm not talking about speaking your mind and screaming fire in a crowded theater kind of a thing. I mean, just speaking your mind, telling people what you think. Here is a little bit on women in the military.
And all the elite
groups? I guess the answer is yes, because they're really into it, and some of them are really, really good.
I had two graduate from the Ranger School.
Yeah, I would also speak to the generals because I would want to hear that without a political bent. I'd want to hear the truth. I mean, you know, to the public, they say yes, 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 but I would want to hear without a political bent. But I tell you what, I know some women that are just, Ronda Rousey is an example, who likes me, said,
lucky for you.
I'd take her up my side as a fighter. So the answer is yes, I would. I would also want to speak, however, to the military.
All right. Here is what I really wanted to get to. I just thought that might be interesting. Birthright citizenship. How do you feel about it? 523-1450. 523-1450. 805-6180. The reason that I'm asking about it seems to me to be an extraordinarily important topic. Now, did the founders or did the people who brought in the idea of birthright citizenship, did they have it in their mind to be able to have people sneak into the country? Was this in the initial thinking behind this, you know, this part of the Constitution? You're born in America, you're a citizen. Did they want it to include people that came here illegally? And the term anchor baby, as everybody knows, somebody comes here illegally, has a child, then that child is a citizen, and now you can't just kick this person out because their baby is a citizen. Is that what the people who's passed that had in mind? And even if it was, is it a good idea? Now, we're talking about 300,000 or 400,000 babies being born here illegally from illegals. And then their citizen is, I mean, I know that we've gotten used to the idea. Do you think, though, that that's what the plan was? And if it was, isn't it time to change it? I mean, it's the ultimate case of rewarding bad behavior. And a lot of people out there are saying that it's just the way it is. You have to accept it. Why? Now with Trump is a time to challenge certain things. Now here he is talking about that.
The latest CNN ORC poll, you don't get more accurate than that. It has you for the first time considered competitive in the general election. 6 points separating you and Hillary Clinton. You must.
Actually, this is not birthright citizenship, but I'll bring that up next.
Be shocked.
Well, it's not my focus right now. Right now, I have 16 other people that I'm looking at, and that's not my focus, but indirectly, it probably is. And I think that Hillary's going to have a hard time being in the election based on what's happening with the emails, the servers, maybe even the speeches. I think it's going to be a very hard thing for her to overcome. When I look, Chris, at what happened with Petraeus on a much smaller level, great general, wonderful guy, everybody loves him, and they've destroyed his life over much less. I mean, in terms of confidentiality, in terms of importance, much less and far fewer. And it would seem hard to think that somebody could have a much worse situation than him and escape.
Well, the factual distinction would be that was classified information with Petraeus, and he knew it and he used it. Here, we do not know yet that Hillary Clinton was doing the wrong thing or mishandling classified information.
But it looks like it was, and it certainly looks like it was very high-level information. And what's the purpose of it? You know, it's always skirting the edge. What's the purpose of it? In the end, she had something in mind. She didn't want people to know or something. But what is she doing? Why is she doing it?
you think this is going to really hurt her long time?
Oh, I think it's devastating. I think it's devastating for the election, but I think her bigger problem is not the election. I think her bigger problem is going to be the criminal problem.
You really think that this could turn out to be a criminal situation for Hillary Clinton? Because
well,
there's no reference of that from the investigators right now.
I don't think I'm the only one. I mean, the FBI is involved. They only do criminal. I don't think I'm the only one. Now, maybe it's somebody on her staff. But look, it's either criminal or it's incompetent. It's one or the other. There's either gross incompetence or criminal. And neither's acceptable to be president.
I feel like you're skipping the headline. You're 6 points from Hillary Clinton. Nobody would have expected that. You're kind of glossing over it. Why? Shouldn't you be saying 6 points? I can't believe I'm not ahead.
Well, that's one thing I could say, I guess. You know, I think we'll do very well against Hillary. Hillary's record as Secretary of State was a disaster. She was in favor, totally in favor of the Iraq war, which is obviously not a good soundbite. I think we're going to do very well. And as you know, I've been against it for years, the Iraq war. I said, you're going to decimate Iraq.
It's Iran the 2015.
All right, so let's take a little break here, and we're going to come back and talk about birthright citizenship. I want to give you a little bit of background on it. And the fact of the matter is there's a huge debate over this right now. And the debate has to do with whether we can continue to offer citizenship to people that sneak in. Now, that might be offensive to you, but if it is, I'd like to ask why. What is so offensive about confronting a huge problem, you know? Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180. We'll read a few more texts when we come back. It is 717, about 30 to 40% chance of rain today. We got about 3/4 of an inch last night. It rained pretty hard. I left my windows cracked open, and it was inside my car when I woke up, so I could hear it pounding on and off all night. I think it started around midnight where I was, but came down pretty heavy. So anyway, we will be right back at 7:17 to talk about birthright citizenship. All right, so birthright citizenship, what does it mean? All right, the 14th Amendment was brought in to deal with slavery based on applying the law of the Constitution of the Bill of Rights to the states. Amendment 14, Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Now, the question is, in that first sentence, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens of the United States. Question, did the people that wrote the 14th Amendment mean to reward individuals who came here illegally to with the citizenship for the children? They came here to have a baby. Now, I would say there's a way to read this in which you could say no, and the basic reading would be implied that this wouldn't be here people who came here illegally, because that would be a reward, a blandishment, and a huge achievement for people who are here breaking the law. It's just a general question, but this is a problem. You don't have to take the position that this is racism, because these could be people from anywhere in the world of any race. It just so happens to seem to apply to Mexicans, but I think that just by virtue of the fact that we're on the the border, and we've got so many people that are coming over, and a large number of the women coming over would say, it is one of my goals to have a baby here, and we do have a phone call. So if their goal is to break the law of the United States and then give birth to a child that is a citizen, is that really something that we should be doing? Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
And subject to the jurisdiction thereof are six words that Senator Howard intentionally had put in there to specify that, no, it does not apply to everybody that gets born here. And to understand this, you have to go back to the original intent of what was meant when it was written. And he expanded upon that, too. I haven't got it written right in front of me, but I did look it up this weekend, and he goes on to say, of course this doesn't apply to everybody born here. It excludes aliens and foreigners.
All right,
and diplomats.
So, I'm sorry, what?
And diplomats and ambassadors. And then it goes on, he went on to say, it does include all other classes of persons. It can be very much argued that it did not include people who were here illegally and did not owe their allegiance to this country in any way, shape, or form to start with.
Right. Well, I mean,
so I believe personally that Trump is on very solid ground.
Well, I mean, he's not the person who invented this topic. I mean, this is something that's been debated for a long time, you know?
I understand. I also understand our Supreme Court has made some major screw-ups over its lifetime, made three horrible decisions this summer.
Yeah, no, it's no doubt about that. But, I mean, the thing is, if your parents are traveling, and say your parents travel to Poland, and, you know, you're in your mother's pregnant, plane lands in Poland, and then you're born in the Polish airport, that doesn't make you a Polish citizen. Pardon me. It doesn't make you a Polish citizen or a non-American citizen.
Right. You just happen to be where you're born.
It shows that citizenship is a much larger issue than just where you're born.
Correct. And, you know, and very, very few other nations do this. I mean, this is half the national suicide. It's an invitation to just bring everybody in. And, of course, not only is a child born here and they're a citizen, then they get to drag in everybody that they're related to.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the call, Bill. All right, folks, the fact of the matter is that there is something that's bigger here than just where you happen to be born. It's the idea of being an American. So, for instance, you're traveling overseas, your parents are traveling overseas and they give birth to you, does that mean that you have to go through the citizenship process? You know, that you come in and you're an alien and that you have to then go through all of the stuff people have to go through for citizenship? Of course not. So people, here's the basic thing, and I'm not talking about, you could have, well, I mean, it all comes together, I think. If someone comes here, here's a question I would ask for any person who's liberal on this issue. Should people who come here illegally, whatever their intent is, and have a child, should that child be automatically granted U.S. citizenship? If so, why? Another text, after checking out the 14th Amendment this weekend, Trump is on solid ground. A few more texts here. This is from last week, but there are tunnels near Tucson. I'm wondering if El Chapo is hiding in those tunnels. We were talking about people coming in and 70 miles within the Arizona border. We have another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show.
Yes, this is Ralph. Kelly, hey. I think that every child born here in the United States should be declared an American citizen.
They are, Ralph. They are declared a citizen. The question is, though, should it be a reward for people who break the law? Let's just say, a lady is living over in Mexico, and she says to herself, "My only chance for my family to get ahead is to be in America." She comes here heavily pregnant just so she can give birth to a citizen. Do you think that's the way it should be?
No, absolutely not. The mother should be deported. The child should be kept here, and they should be given to the planned parenthood that people praise so much. Maybe they can do something with that illegal mother to teach her to take her child with her when she leaves, when she's deported. Absolutely no way should she be allowed to stay here. Number one priority should be the criminals. Number two should be these mothers that come over here to have children.
All right, so you support changing the law then?
No. Deport the mother, leave the child here if she does not want to take the child with her, but the mother goes or the father goes.
Well, what about this? Ralph, hold on. What if you just said, came here illegally, you had no right to come to the country, you had no right, therefore, to give birth to your child here. Here's your child. Good luck in Mexico. Why would that be the wrong thing?
Did you say legally or illegally?
No, they came here illegally. Just say the woman.
No, legally, that's fine.
No,
yeah,
but if you said, here's your child back, and your child is not a U.S. citizen, good luck. Why would that be an evil thing? I don't understand this.
I still don't get your question.
The question is, Ralph,
the mother.
Hold on a second. The question is, if a person comes here not only to break the law, but let's just say, for a fact, we know they're coming here to have a baby so it can be born in America, so it can be someone that the family can all, you know, come in and become citizens through. But if we know that the mother is coming here to have a child, illegally coming here to have a child so that the child is a citizen, why is that not also an illegal action? And why shouldn't the child be denied citizenship? Why is the child given this incredibly a valuable thing as a result of an illegal act?
Because the 14th Amendment says so.
Why,
you
though?
Do not need
why
to
don't
deport
we read it differently?
Child.
Why don't we read
the
it differently?
Child should not be deported.
Why don't we read it differently? Why don't we read it to say something along the lines of natural born citizen, if you're born here, comma, legally, or if you know what I'm saying? Why not assume that the clear meaning of the text is that someone is here legally?
Well, Kelly, you're turning things around quite a bit for me. I just make it plain simple. Deport the mother. If she doesn't want to take the child, fine. Give it to the Planned Parenthood. I understand they need a lot of kids nowadays.
They need a lot of body parts.
Well, a lot of people are sticking up for the Planned Parenthood, and the mother should actually be deported, and the father, all of them.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody that's illegal here should be deported. I know a girl that had worked for 13 years to get her citizenship, and she worked hard at it. And do you think she wants all these illegals to be granted amnesty?
Obviously not.
No, but hell no.
Obviously not. All right, Ralph, thanks for the call. All right, got to take a break here, but I've got this whole thing has brought up Planned Parenthood now, the story that I was going to, that is very bizarre that these people, that the judge allowed the video clips to be released, and so now they're playing the clips again, but it came and I just happened to run into this story about why the guy who killed Jeffrey Dahmer, the gentleman in Wisconsin that killed all of the men and had sex with the corpses and cannibalized them and everything. It's a very, very weird thing, but there's a connection to Planned Parenthood, believe it or not. We will be right back. 7:33 on the Kelly O'Connor Show, 523-1450. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. All right, so little segue here. The All right. So Planned Parenthood, they found this video where the person, people leading Planned Parenthood are, I'm going to return to the 14th Amendment thing, but I just want to get this off my mind, off the list. I was meaning on telling you that today. There is this story about why the guy who killed Jeffrey Dahmer, and it reminded me of these people running these abortion businesses that are selling parts, you know, parts is parts. And they say that they're, you know, sometimes send out these bodies, and the people who are buying these baby parts, or these baby parts, are opening up the body, the little body bag, and finding a complete body in there. And it's like, you know, a heavenly choir starts singing. It's this almost religious experience where they are so thrilled. I mean, it's so ghastly what they're doing. And, you know, Walt Rubel himself got on the show and said that he considered human life to start at conception. So there's a lot of people out there that have no, and I'm not saying this about Walt, but there's a lot of people out there that don't have any recognition of human life until it's the person's up and can defend themselves a little bit. Anyway, it reminded me of the story of why the guy, Jeffrey Dahmer was killed. Jeffrey Dahmer is this guy in Wisconsin that blonde-haired guy captured all of these minority men and boys and killed them and kept them in his apartment. He worked in a factory, and he would do various things to them, the corpses, including cannibalize them. And so the guy who killed him finally stated why he killed Jeffrey Dahmer. He said that he avoided spending any time around him. And because the Jeffrey Dahmer was always making jokes about killing people and eating them and stuff like that. Here's Dahmer's former prison minister says this: if he saw a guard that was nervous and standing near enough to hear him, he would say, "I bite." According to the pastor, Roy Ratcliffe, usually the guard would jump away and that would make Jeff laugh. He played with his persona to exaggerate it and make people more fearful. This was just his way of morbid humor to deal with his hopeless situation. All right. So the guy that killed him was named Scarver. And the Dahmer had killed 17 men and boys between 1978 and 1991, having sex with the corpses, keeping some of the body parts, and eating others. And he actually tried to turn some of them into zombies by drilling holes in their head and, like, pouring acid in there. Totally bizarre. But anyway, Scarver, this guy Scarver, said that he kept a clipping of this. Christopher Scarver was sentenced to two life terms in prison. He had killed a boss. Well, he had killed somebody at his work. So anyway, the guy was designated as schizophrenic. And so Scarver is put in this work detail with Jeffrey Dahmer. And Jeffrey Dahmer is with this other guy. And Scarver is, they're like cleaning something. And then Scarver feels like he's poked in the back. He feels somebody poke him in the back. He turns around and asks who did it. And neither one of them would admit it, but they both started laughing. So then Scarver pulls out this clipping in his pocket of Dahmer's crimes and asks him if he did these things, because I was fiercely disgusted. He was shocked. Yes, he was. All right. So then he gets this metal bar and hits him over the head. But he says one of the reasons that he killed him was because Jeffrey Dahmer would take, like, his mashed potatoes and turn them into body parts and then drizzle ketchup over them. And then, like, set these like fake body parts that look like they had just been torn off. He would set them around the kitchen or wherever else, and so that people would find them and be totally grossed out. So this guy thought that Dahmer had never repented. He treated the whole thing as a joke, and that he it was time that somebody taught him a lesson. So that's basically how Jeffrey Dahmer ended up biting the big one. 7:43, you're listening to AL Mouse Cruises on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell here, 523-1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll come back and talk about birthright citizenship, being born here as a way to being a citizen. It is, of course, Kelly 646, and I've got Mike McKay.
Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you, Kelly?
Good. You took a trip.
Oh, yes. I was right by the Animas River last week in Durango, Colorado, and took the train ride up to Silverton. Huge metals that turned the river to yellow. But by the time I was there last week, it looked pristine. Wasn't quite pristine, but
was it warm enough to swim?
Oh, sure. There were people rafting down the river and stuff like that. Beautiful part of the world. Beautiful part of the world.
But you would encourage anybody to go on that trip?
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah.
How do they get the train part of it?
Pardon me?
How do you get the train? You said it's a short line or?
Well, it's a narrow gauge.
Narrow gauge.
Yeah. So, in other words, the width of the tracks is much narrower than standard, and it's easier to build around mountainsides and stuff like that. And that goes up to Silverton from Durango, right downtown Durango. It's a fun trip.
I'd like to do it.
Yes, ought to do it. We've got some changes here at KOBE. I just wanted to point out real quickly, of course, for the last several months, people have been listening to Glenn Beck right after your show. Kelly, and then this afternoon, Jerry Doyle, who has been on for an hour each night at 10 o'clock for a number of years, and a lot of people have commented about how much they enjoy it. They would like to hear him earlier. He will be moving up. Little show, little side. He grew up right around the corner from me in Brooklyn, New York.
Really?
I found that out later. I don't never met the man, but nonetheless. And then Dave Ramsey will be moving to a one-hour show at Jerry Doyle.
Jerry Doyle is kind of a he's kind of a libertarian.
Well, he, you know, tune in, join the show, find out, define him for yourself.
He was a guy that he's been on various Star Trek episodes. He's an actor. He's a very flamboyant or very opinionated guy. He's funny. He's got a great sense of humor.
I noticed a lot of you guys here on KOBE have opinions.
I won't even ask you about birthright citizenship.
Oh, well, that's certainly, well, it's very, very hard to repeal an amendment to the Constitution. So that would be but a lot of people have been talking about it lately, certainly. Admit, I know historically it was enacted because of slavery and people were born here and denied citizenship, and that seemed to make sense then. You know, in this day and age, I don't know. Maybe it is. It's certainly an interesting debate.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on the show, Mike. I'd like to get you on here more often.
No, I'll pop in now and then, Kelly. I always enjoy it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, folks. Let's take a little break here. And we'll be right back to finish up talking about birthright citizenship and whether we should change the rules. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, your text line 805-6180. Be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, did I just hear you guys mention you're taking Dave Ramsey off the air?
They're cutting him from 3 hours to 1 hour back, and I think they're putting him on like at 10 at night.
Oh, what? That's horrible. Oh, okay. You probably get him
online,
I guess. Huh? You don't have to listen to the radio.
I'm on the air. I got to go. Did you want to say anything? Did you want to say anything on the air? All right. So we just got an upset caller over Dave Ramsey All right, so Jerry Doyle is going to be coming on the I think it's 4 for 3 hours. So anyway, sorry if you're upset by that. Jerry Doyle is probably, I mean, he's more controversial than obviously Dave Ramsey is does a economic show. So he's bound to be more controversial. But anyway, here we go. The only thing that's consistent in life is change. All is flux, said Heraclitus. Anyway, here is a little clip on Trump and birthright citizenship.
Donald Trump and Jeb Bush facing off over immigration.
You are going to love me in terms of immigration.
Mr. Trump now has a plan, if that's what it's called.
Trump now arguing the United States should revoke the citizenship of people born here to undocumented immigrants, going a step further than his earlier proposal to end birthright citizenship for such children. That right is enshrined in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which says all persons born in the U.S. are U.S. citizens. But the GOP frontrunner isn't so sure about that.
And if you speak to some very, very good lawyers, and I know right. some would disagree, but many of them agree with me, you're going to find they do not have American citizenship. We have to start a process where we take back our country. Our country is going to hell.
And while Trump isn't the only candidate who's expressed support for the idea of ending birthright citizenship, Bush says the real estate mogul's attack on citizenship doesn't make sense.
I just don't think it's legitimate to say that we're going to change our Constitution and that's going to solve our problem. I don't think that that's the proper thing to do.
He said the way to prevent abuse of citizenship rules is better enforcement of the law.
Better enforcement so that you don't have these, anchor babies, as they're described, coming into the country.
Trump's tough talk on immigration is helping win him support for now, but it could spell trouble for the Republican Party down the road. Mitt Romney won just 27% of the Latino vote in 2012, and the party has to do better than that to win in 2016.
All right, so that is the claim there, that it's going to harm the party. Let me ask you this, though. Is it the right thing to do? Was the birthright citizenship the design to have illegal people come in and give birth and then get citizenship for the children? Think about it just for a minute. If that was not the purpose of the law and it's an accidental aspect of the law, shouldn't we do something about it? And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Marty.
Hey, Marty. Good morning to you. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
Oh, I first comment is that, I don't think the birthright citizenship was what I think it's been taken out of context. Their hearts are in the right place, but it's not the right thing to do anymore in the country. The second thing I want to mention is I'm a practice, and I was one of the only Anglos in the mass as usual. It's usually an all Hispanic mass. And he just took off on Trump and how Trump is going to throw out all the Mexicans. And he opened his arms out to the congregation, and everybody in the congregation, just their eyes were wide open, and they were sounded that he was saying that, because I think it's mostly a conservative Hispanic congregation, as most Catholics are. He never said a word about Obama, despite the fact Obama's funding Planned Parenthood to the tune of $500 million a year. And I just kind of find it odd that I find it's a lot of Catholics who are liberal support Obama, but yet they're pro-life.
Yeah.
And that's about all I got.
I appreciate the call, Marty, and have a good day, folks. So. Anyway, the Catholic theology is conservative. A lot of Catholic people in the streets are conservative, but the hierarchy of the Catholic Church tends to be very liberal in many ways. There's a large gay contingent. Anyway, here we go. Is Trump's plan to end birthright citizenship Fox News? Is it possible? Check it out just for a moment.
I'm Lauren Green, and you're in the strategy room. The 14th Amendment is up for debate among Republicans vying to be the next president. Businessman and GOP frontrunner Donald Trump is calling for the end to birthright citizenship, and other GOP candidates are calling foul, believing this is nearly impossible to do. Here with reaction is Tom Dupree, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General. Welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
So what do you think of this? I mean, will it take a constitutional amendment? I mean, will we even get to the idea of a constitutional amendment to end the birthright citizenship?
Well, the first thing that happens is Congress has to act. Congress would have to pass legislation essentially repealing birthright citizenship. And at that point, the question really would probably go all the way up to the Supreme Court, basically whether Congress has the power to repeal birthright citizenship or whether birthright citizenship is something guaranteed to people mm-hmm. under our Constitution.
I mean, is Mr. Trump out of line for even suggesting this? I mean, would other candidates, like a GOP candidate like Scott Walker, have taken this stance without Trump even making the first move?
Well, Trump has been pushing the envelope on immigration and on many other issues. And
well, I mean, obviously, we wouldn't be talking about this. What we'd be talking about is Rubio's plan to naturalize the citizens. Now, I think that got to do, obviously, do the best thing that we can for the country, and that is to keep all of the good illegals and get rid of the bad ones, right? I mean, if this is a company, that's what you do. So we've got to – obviously, you're not going to kick all these people out of the country, but I think what it is it's a statement about –